Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Defense, you may continue the playing of this deposition.
Three notes that I referenced earlier, correct?
Yes.
Do you have any independent recollection about this alleged fall?
I remember it was reported to me that she had fallen twice. When I talked to the nurse, Joellen Beers, she said that no one had witnessed these falls. And this was right after the mom had come back in the room after being gone for several days. First, it was the eye problems. Then it was two falls. And
Was in terms of the investigation, the quality control investigation you outlined, what was the result of that in terms of whether a fall occurred or not?
We were unsure if a fall had actually occurred. It seemed like Maya may not be 100% forthcoming because she had multiple stories on multiple occasions about exactly what happened.
Okay, when you say multiple, are we talking two or more than two?
I don't remember how many, to be honest with you, but I know at one point she said there was a nurse in the room and she was on the edge of the bed and she slid off, but somebody helped her. And so it just got complicated. So I'm not sure.
All right. Looking at her note, it indicates Maya had said that Maya almost fell. But later said that she didn't fall. Do you have any recollection of your involvement with this alleged fall?
I think she had already been examined, I'm not sure. Let's see. As soon as the patient falls, we go down and examine the patient to see if there's any acute injury, but I'm not sure who did the post-fall. If she was reporting it at a time later, I'm not sure who did that post-fall assessment.
Okay. And at some point, I understand Maya was moved into a room with video monitoring. Why did that occur?
Well, because, there were questions about whether she was being accurate about what she was reporting.
Why were there questions about the accuracy of what she was reporting?
Because the story kept changing.
Understood. I meant to ask this earlier, but there was a period of time where Maya's mother was not rooming in with her, right? And I think you talked about that. You recall talking about that?
We asked her to leave for a couple days, yeah.
Was that done to separate Maya from her mother for any type of malicious purpose?
Oh, absolutely not. We just wanted to see what would happen to her function because the end result is that the child was more functional. If being around her mother eliminates her functionality, then we can make all the gains in the world. But as soon as she goes home with mom, we'll go right back to where we were. So that's why all of us were starting to discuss as a team whether inpatient psychiatric care might be warranted.
Okay. And was the separation done to torture or otherwise harass the family?
No, and when Dr. Vijapura talked to Bieda about it, I believe that she agreed to leave for a couple days. But then, of course, when she came back, it was this big situation with the eye and the falls. And
so how would you characterize that period of time when mom wasn't around in terms of Maya's progression?
She was interacting with her children on the floor. And just in general, we try to have a lot of fun on our service because the kids don't have to be there, right? And they're working hard to gain function. So I think she had a pretty good time while her mom was gone, participating in activities and such.
It says mom also discussed the unwitnessed reported falls and mom stated Maya's story had changed several times. Do you see that?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so am I correct in assuming here that mom was expressing that Maya had changed her story several times?
Yeah.
And that's about the fall we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, the two falls.
Right, but why again do we place Maya in a video monitored room based on this?
Now? Well, if you fall on PD rehab, you're going to end up in a video monitored room because we're not going to, we're not going to we're going to observe you closely so you don't get up and fall again.
Apparently, mom also contacted Dr. Gieron asking for a CT of the head. Is that Dr. Gieron? Is that the neurologist we talked about earlier?
Yeah.
Okay. Did Dr. Gieron order the CT of the head?
No, she had no focal signs or symptoms, and we told mother we'd continue to monitor, but we didn't feel that it was a medical issue.
It says here, inpatient pediatric rehab concerns include significant functional regression related to non-organic factors, suspected conversion disorder. What are you explaining there in your note?
We just couldn't find anything physically wrong with her that would cause all these symptoms. And she had had a pretty good workup at two major medical, respected, stellar medical institutions. And we didn't feel there was a physiologic cause for her disability. We felt at that point, and we were getting along in the rehab admission, I believe, that this was psychologic and psychiatric in nature.
Later on in your note, and I think you talked about this earlier, but this is a specific note about it. It says, occasionally Maya would become limp and collapse forward, but then recover and resume standing. What are you describing there in that note?
You don't have rapid changes in muscle movement like that. Muscles slowly get better and they go on a trajectory. So to see a kid who's walking and then collapses, that's why we had her in the walker with the saddle, because we felt otherwise she would just fall on the floor, or we'd have to, keep her from falling on the floor. So she'd walk and then she would go into this sort of a floppy posture. And I think Dr. Kornberg thought, okay, let's err on the side of caution. This is a pediatric patient, realizing that all tests and treatments have risk and benefits. And this could result in her having some kind of complication from the MRI itself. However, he felt that it was a reasoned decision to look at the parenchyma, which is the actual tissue of the brain, and just rule out once and for all that there was any brain abnormality.
And do you recall if this MRI of the parenchyma was done inpatient at Tampa General or at an outpatient basis?
We put it as an outpatient basis because Maya's old enough to hold still. If she had been younger, we usually put those kids under like a general anesthesia so they hold still so we can get adequate pictures.
Well, why don't you tell me what your recollection of preparing this discharge summary was?
I just want to make sure that we checked every box, dotted every I and crossed every T. She needed, family psychological counseling as soon as possible. We had actually said to the mom that we recommended inpatient for Maya and intensive counseling for the mother, even though she is not the patient. She's part of the patient's family unit that will be our discharge plan. So we felt comfortable doing that. And we gave her the actual phone numbers. We gave her the number for Aetna Behavioral Health because that was her insurance plan to get authorization. We gave her psychiatry's information.
Okay. And do you know one way or the other whether Maya's family followed through on those recommendations?
No, because as I recall, best I can remember, she never answered the phone when I called.
So I just want to know what you're explaining there in this line in your discharge summary where you say Maya exhibited physical abilities to move into bed and perform fine motor activities. However, she had reduced effort whenever physical examination was undertaken. What are you explaining there?
I'm explaining that she could move normally until she was asked to move.
Okay. And it also references in your discharge summary some demonstrated inconsistencies of examination and strength and effort. What are you explaining there?
Just that if she wanted to do something, she could do it.
Can you please explain to me what is being communicated there, recognizing we probably have jurors that probably don't have the same technical capability that perhaps yourself and Dr. Kornberg do?
So I'll just keep it simple, but I don't want it to sound judgmental at all. When Maya wanted to do something, she could do it. I watched her paint her nails with a dotting tool and do flowers and all kinds of things that I don't even think fine motor. She had normal fine motor movement when she wanted to do something. And when she didn't want to do something, she would complain of pain or she would lose function and ask for help.
Understood. And I also see, continuing through the rest of this note, it indicates that Maya would have variable pain scores. What does that mean?
You know, once again, pain scores are something that you trend over time, and people have, you know, you give them a medication, they have less pain. It takes a pattern.
And I notice here as well, there's an entry here that says that Maya would, quote, consistently voice more pain complaints and behaviors when her mother was present, end quote. Do you see that?
That was the correlation that I had made.
Okay.
And the team had made.
Okay. And was that, did you observe that throughout the course of this hospitalization?
Yes, from the very first day.
So was there a period of time when mom was not around?
Yes.
And what was your recollection of how Maya was during that period of time?
I felt that she did better when her mother was not in the room, and when her mother returned, she had this, you know, list of complaints of things that had happened that if her mother had been there, you know, her mother could have done something. I don't know. It was kind of said in a guilt-producing way. And that was a whole goal of rehab. We thought about it to the smallest detail. We wanted kids to feel like kids again, not like patients.
Okay.
Because that's the way to get them back in the community.
Oh, here it is. Maya made significant, it's, tell me if you can see this in the note. It says, quote, Maya made significant functional improvements over the period when she did not have a rooming in parent, end quote. Do you see that?
Yes.
What is being described here in the discharge summary?
So, you know, that Maya had, we were thinking psychological, psychiatric, right? And the correlation between the parents being in the room and her becoming completely dependent suggested, once again, a psychological etiology for her problems, cause for her problems.
Based on your review of this discharge summary about this, what was the ultimate conclusion about that unwitnessed fall?
You know, I think some members of the team questioned her authenticity because of the changing of the story and the lack of any injury and the other complaints that she was using to make her mother feel like she was not attentive.
Why did the team recommend inpatient psychiatric care?
There was something really, really wrong with this little girl. I don't know what it was. It's not my area of expertise, but I've worked with a lot of kids over 24 years and a lot of families. And believe me, I'm missed benefit of the doubt. I am a strong patient advocate. But as I worked with this child, there was something so, the fact that she could continually do this disability behavior and then come back with full function and disability and be talking to you the whole time. There was something really wrong there. I don't know how to fix that.
You recall if Maya was able to keep her feet in an anatomically correct position during the course of this hospitalization?
Absolutely.
And then it appears as if somebody had asked for oxycodone the morning of discharge. Do you see that?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Why was that something you would have noted on a discharge exam?
It was further illustrating the mother's hyper-focus on medical tests and treatments.
Okay. Does this case stand out to you after the multiple years you've been in the pediatric realm?
Yes.
And why?
It was just something I'd never seen before. I haven't seen since, to the point of my retirement, was a situation exactly like this. This was a really abnormal situation where I felt the mother and daughter both had significant mental illness. I'm not labeling it. I'm just saying it was mental illness and that they were in some sort of battle with each other. And we weren't helping at that point. She needed inpatient psychiatric care.
It's fair to say you would defer to psychiatry and neuropsychology on those opinions?
Absolutely.
I think you talked a little bit about you would defer to some of the psychiatric and neuropsychology findings. You would defer to your colleagues on the team in those specialties, right?
Right. And we don't necessarily, refer out of the country unless it's something really specific and there's a major medical center that specializes in that.
your discussion with Dr. Smith, do you recall how long it was by chance, approximately?
Oh, it had to be longer than 10 minutes, but maybe less than a half an hour or something like that.
And just in a very synopsis fashion, what did you discuss with Dr. Smith?
Well, so there's a little bit of backstory, if I may. I had actually attempted, when I talked to Dr. Smith, we had talked to Dr. Kornberg to speak to Dr. Hart about the fact that we kind of wanted to red flag this kid because we were worried about ongoing medical intervention. And parents will set up a pattern, there's specific disorders, but they set up a pattern of seeking unnecessary medical care for their children. And we were worried this was going to happen. And the reason we thought that was threefold. One, the mother had absolutely no acceptance of what diagnosis we were telling her or even diagnostic category we were telling her. She had been to several major medical centers with complete workups, and that's a red flag to us. Second opinions are fine, but going to multiple medical centers is not okay. And that she had doctor shopped. Do you know what that means?
I have an understanding, but if you please go ahead and explain what you mean by it.
Well, so doctor shopping is when you go to one person and ask for a test and they don't give it to you or a treatment. And so you go to the next person on the team and ask them, and specifically physicians. And Bieta was seeking medical treatment. And those are red flags for us. So did I, you know, I thought that I wish there was a way we could flag her chart so that people would know going forward, if they didn't read all the records, that that this could be a problem, because tests have consequences. They have risks and benefits. And so if you test a kid a lot, you'll run into a complication sooner or later.
And so do you know did you at this time know very many people over at JHACH?
I mean, I worked there for 12 years, so I knew some people.
What years were you there again?
Let's see. I went 91 to about, I think, 95, and then I quit to go. I got a scholarship for a year of pre-med. I went full-time to school for pre-med, and then I came back to the cardiovascular intensive care unit. Was my primary position as a clinical nurse specialist.
Okay, and then you stayed until sometime in the 2000s?
2005.
Did you, let me throw some names out. You said before that you knew Sally Smith, but did you know a social worker that handled a lot of the reporting requirements over there by the name of Kathy Beatty?
I don't remember the name Kathy Beatty.
Was there the people, can you name the names of the people that were the occupational therapists and physical therapists? I'm trying to just get some names.
Well, so they have prime, right, I can give you names. So there was a Diane Allen, who was our occupational therapist, and Marissa Higgins was our DPT, our physical therapist.
Marissa Higgins?
Higgins, H-I-G-G-I-N-S.
Okay, Higgins. Tell me about Diane Allen. Is she still in town, to the best of your knowledge? And Marissa Higgins? Okay.
Yes.
And Marissa Higgins is too. Okay.
Marissa Higgins has now left, and I believe she's up at University of Florida, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I only know that because I wrote a job recommendation for her when she left TGH. She was so wonderful. Nurse practitioners, as a rule, stick within the common things. We're not medically trained in terms of going to medical school. And we treat the common things, that there are algorithms, there are care plans, there are established plans of care. We do not go into treating something like chronic regional pain syndrome, which is hard to, you know, it's a hard diagnosis to make. It requires, you know, upper level input.
But you are aware that the treatment for complex regional pain syndrome, since it does include a mixture of physiological and psychological issues, is different than purely psychological, like conversion disorder, or purely, say, a problem with neuropathy?
Because I'm there to facilitate treatment. I'm not there to set the medical goals.
I understand that. Would it be fair to say that, and like I said, her being demanding, but would you agree that she was pretty open and honest with you about what she thought needed to be done and what she had observed in Maya?
Yes, she was good at sharing specific information, but I don't think that she was, and she was medically, you know, her knowledge base was there. However, functional medicine is very, very different than any other type of service you're going to see. And I didn't feel she really understood the whole purpose and function of what we were doing. I couldn't really get past there's something physically wrong with her.
Has it ever come to your attention that physical therapy is a recognized primary treatment for CRPS?
I knew that, yes.
Okay. And that if physical therapy does not work in the sense the child is still in extraordinary pain, that this becomes what's known as intractable CRPS?
I've heard of intractable chronic regional pain syndrome. Yes, I did not know that the pain would become intractable. I'm not sure even what you're asking, to be honest.
There's a term called there's a term called intractable diseases, intractable CRPS in this instance, and I'd wondered if you had ever heard of that in conjunction with, since this is the area you're in, people who do not do as well as expected or as they should from physical therapy.
We just didn't deal with a lot of chronic regional pain syndrome patients.
Do you know if there is any type of consulting record in the files that we're not seeing where someone did do a differential diagnosis and describes it in writing?
You know, this child was a referral in for functional rehabilitation, and she had come from All Children's, which is a major medical center that is capable of doing just about any type of evaluation they want to do on that kid. So that's a question really for Dr. Hart. She came to us as sort of a, you know, at the end of her situation to get functional again, and to get back into the community and get back into school. But I know that Dr. Kornberg had talked to multiple specialists. I know we talked to endocrinology about the steroid wean and neurology, and Dr. Casadante, who's brilliant, had seen her over at All Children's. And, so we kind of assume the differential is done by the time they come to us, but we're open to any suggestions, and we keep all the referring physicians from other facilities informed of our progress.
So if Dr. Kornberg testified under oath that he found not just physical, but signs of any child abuse of any kind, would you defer to him?
Yeah, no, I have a memory of what I have a memory of, and I'm testifying under oath. And so I can only tell you what I did. I can't speak to what Dr. Kornberg said, although I respect him tremendously. And, if he remembers different, it may be that he has the more correct memory. I can't.
It's a simple question, and that is whether you, as a well-qualified nurse, but still a nurse.
Nurse practitioner.
Nurse practitioner, but without his level of training and such things, whether you are going to state that you're independent, you have an independent opinion separate and differing from his that you wish to stand on, as opposed to what Dr. Kornberg concluded after reviewing all the records.
He sat in the team meetings. He heard what the team had to say. Now, what his memory is and my memory, I don't want to go back and forth parsing things. Would I question my memory? Yeah, I'm old. you know, and this was a lot of years ago. And I'm here to give my testimony to the best of my ability.
But are you telling this jury that a 9-year-old little girl on this cocktail of powerful narcotics and benzodiazepines, Xanax, Valium, oxycodone, is going to behave the same way as a child that is not on all of those?
So you can have adverse effects or side effects from narcotics and benzos. And can that change a child's behavior? Absolutely.
Do you show that there at the end, the last drug records show her still on the narcotics?
Yes, yeah, so there were individual single doses given at times. You know, once a child comes off of a narcotic wean, it doesn't mean she can't ever have pain meds or can't ever have the Valium. And I know she was having problems with spasms, but we typically use baclofen for spasms because it doesn't affect the child's cognition as much.
Okay. So you would agree with me then that you never knew Maya Kowalski when she didn't have some of these drugs in her system.
So I do believe there were times when her medication, you know, it has a half-life, right? And so it's not going to affect her for if she's getting a single dose beyond, you know, 8 to 12 hours, it should be out of her system. But
did you ever know Maya Kowalski before she arrived at that hospital?
No. I heard her name. I heard her name as a potential referral.
So in this instance, Beata was attempting or encouraging her daughter to try to get back to her life through your physical therapy, was she not?
Yeah, I don't know what Beata was.
Well, can you think of any other reason why she would say to her daughter, we need to get you back skating or swimming, other than encouraging her to get back to skating or swimming? Can you think of any other reason?
It may have been a control issue.
Well, the control issue in that regard would be trying to get Maya to get better, to work harder to get better, would it not?
I can't speak to, you know, what the mother's intentions were.
Well, does this sound like she's trying to prevent her daughter from skating or swimming when she says, we need to get you back skating or swimming?
You know, to hear you say it the way you say it, I perceived it a little bit differently when I was actually physically in the room. And it may have been about control, you know, Maya not wanting to do something that her mother wanted her to do. So, you know, her response may have been, hey, I would like to get her back to being functioning. Could have been that. Could have been control.
Control in what sense? Explain that control of a mother encouraging her daughter.
You know, so sometimes kids want to be more independent and their parents have problems relinquishing to the child, to what the child, you know. There are times when the mom is trying to control the child's behavior and the child doesn't want that control. And so they'll say things that are directly contradictory to what the parent said. But it may have been that she validly wanted her back in skating or whichever activity it was.
Okay. Well, what you can agree with me on is that Beata was not trying to hold her child back from getting back to a life where she could skate or swim.
The statement the mother made could be interpreted that way.
Beata, by those words, was not trying to keep Maya from pushing herself, correct?
Yeah, I don't know what Beata was trying to do.
Did you ever sit down with Maya and have a talk with her? A long talk with her about whether any of your suspicions were actually the case.
Yes, no. I had conversations with her that would be appropriate for a fourth grader. Things like, you know, what her room looked like and what she liked to do and all those types of things. It's not in my place to sit down and try and counsel a child or, explain to this child something really complex like the situation that we were seeing.
Did you talk to anyone else about the lawsuit or the facts of the case after Maya's discharge? Any friends over there?
Oh, no.
Anybody else at TGA?
No, that's a HIPAA violation. The only person I talked to after discharge was I'm assuming the other person on the phone was Sally Smith, since she reported the phone call with me. I'm
interested in knowing whether you had the ability to take a picture of Maya at any time during her admission there.
I did not take any pictures of Maya during her admission there.
What happened to the film you took of her in the film room?
What film room?
Earlier, that when she fell, you put her in a room.
Oh, the video? Yeah, the video.
Do you know whether the system has the ability to retain?
I don't.
Okay. And are you aware that other physical therapists have said that Beata was a delightful person to work with Maya, and encouraged her to work very hard? Has that come to your attention?
I don't know about that.
Okay, well, was it discussed at the staff meeting that you felt Maya was a victim of some form of child abuse?
We talked about the red flags that we were seeing. Because we work with Munchausen's and Munchausen's by proxy kids, which is the old name for factitious disorder, where they're similar, or that's, you know, the team felt, because of the red flags, that this child was at risk for future testing and treatment that wasn't indicated, because and the mom would be pushing for that, and the testing, you know, if the physician who receives the child doesn't know everything that's been done, you might order those tests. And that's what we were worried about.
All right, one last set of questions then. And we'll obviously have to go back and find a bit more out about this. You accused Beata of doctor shopping.
She did doctor shop. It's in the medical record.
You think that, and we're both in the same hospital?
Yes.
What was the other one, the other doctor? Who was the other doctor you said?
She asked me for a CAT scan, right? So I talked to Dr. Kornberg. And then afterwards, she called Dr. Garone and asked for a CAT scan. And Dr. Garone said, we'll monitor for ongoing signs and symptoms. Dr. Kornberg is a pediatrician, a pediatric physiatrist, and Dr. Garone is a pediatric neurologist.
All right. So the two doctors she asked were the pediatric physiatrist, and the other one was a pediatric neurologist.
Yes.
And so any other examples of doctor shopping besides her asking more than one doctor?
No. Dr. Garone had already seen the patient and written her consult.
So, and I'm not being facetious here. The pediatric physiatrist was the doctor with the most experience with Maya, was he not?
Yes.
Was this after Maya related she had fallen?
I would have to look at the record to determine that. I think it was during that period where she came back after the couple days off and Maya was having this blurry vision or twitching eyelid.
And one says no, and so she decides for a second opinion when the child's having twitching eyelids and blurry vision.
I don't think she was asking for a second opinion.
Are symptoms of a concussion?
I don't think she was asking for a second opinion. She was asking for a CAT scan.
As we know, you're not a CRPS expert in any way, shape, or form, are you?
That's correct.
You're not a pediatric psychiatry expert, are you?
No.
You're not a pediatric psychology expert, are you?
No.
And you're not a psychopharmacologist, are you?
No.
Your Honor, that concludes the presentation.
Okay. Members of the jury, that completes your attendance here today. Remember, tomorrow, Wednesday, you're not with us, and we're going to miss you. Oh, I've got a question for me.
Members of the jury, for context, let me, and the attorneys agree to this as well, the admission at Tampa General Hospital that you just heard about was from July 30th, 2015 through August 27th, 2015. The admission that we've been discussing at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital here, the admission was October 7th, 2016. Now, and with respect to the other jurors' questions, the lawyers are aware of the questions. And like I said, there's still lots of testimony still to come. Members of the jury, that's going to complete your service for today. Tomorrow, like I said, you're not with us, but we will see you on Thursday again at 9 a.m., so just the normal time. Please do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do any investigation and receive no information and enjoy the beach tomorrow.
It's too cold.
Please be seated. The jury is out of our presence. The time consumption. Plaintiffs consumed 2 hours and 5 minutes. The defendants consumed 2 hours, 50 minutes.
5-0.
Yeah, 2 hours, 50 minutes. 2-5-0. The running total, plaintiffs 46 hours, 35 minutes. Defendant 18 hours, 50 minutes. And plaintiffs, I just, it's not for me to tell you how to try your case, but you know, what was it? Miss Nias kind of wrestled a long time with her on the same issue over and over again. So, but you just understand you're at 46 hours, 35 minutes.
I don't think any, Judge, in response, I don't think any of our time has been wasted. In fact, we've been criticized for not calling more people. And we have to respond to what the defense does. And a lot of our case was slowed down tremendously because of the amount of objections and the amount of sidebars and the amount of just kind of litigation. And I'm not sure that that was credited back in any way. And so at some point, we will move the court for some additional time because we don't think it's fair since we have the burden of proof here. And we have to come forward and make a prima facie case that if our case gets delayed or slowed down because of requirements we can't do anything about, we shouldn't be penalized. And so in this instance, I understand I'm heeding the court's warning on that, but
raising the time issue for you. Okay. Are there other issues we need to address today?
We have not yet heard from the defense on their witnesses for Thursday.
Hmm. Let's talk about that. Who are you calling on Thursday?
While they confer on that real quick, Judge, when can we deal? I know we did 30 minutes in the morning, but apparently there's going to be some major issues with just putting in medical records. So we haven't been able to put in any exhibits. When can we deal with that, Judge?
Well, we can.
I mean, do we want to just try to do it like we're doing it 30 minutes before court starts and maybe 15 minutes at lunch? Or perhaps when we have the specific objections, it won't take as long as I'm anticipating.
Well, on Thursday we could start at 8:15.
give us an additional 15 minutes in the morning, so they'll give us 45 minutes.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever been in a case where I've spent so much time with individual exhibits. We've got to figure out a way. You know where I am with this.
I
will sit here and continue to rule as best as I can, as quickly as I can.
Judge, I appreciate that. I also, in the defense of all the attorneys, actually, it's incredibly difficult for some of these exhibits to not have the court lay their eyes on it because of the road we're trying to travel and not open doors.
And I don't criticize that. It's just sometimes it takes 15 or 20 minutes of back and forth
two-page. Shorten our arguments. Absolutely, we agree.
And honestly, I've been very. I want everyone to feel like they have the ability to say what they feel like they need to say, but I honestly don't need to hear it five times from five different people.
Understood. We will.
And from both sides.
Understood. We will heed that comment, Your Honor.
Hopefully, we can trust each other's teammates that if one person says it, then we don't feel compelled to echo it.
Understood.
I have Mr. Altenburn and Mr. Elegant, I guess, by Zoom tomorrow at 3:30. The courtroom will be open if anyone wants to physically be here. I will, of course, run it by Zoom. But as far as those that will appear on the screen, if you will be the lawyers who have registered with Ms. Syback. And then, any member of the public wishing to come can still come via Zoom, or if they want to be here in the courtroom, or I'm assuming the feed will still be coming from, and the TV folks are shaking their head yes, that the feed will still be coming, I guess, live from who they work for. So, any way y'all want to come? Anything else?
As I said at sidebar, we renew our motion to strike the testimony of Bonnie Rice or a curative instruction because this witness testified as though she was an expert when she was anything but, and based largely many of her opinions on pure hearsay. So for the record, Judge, we'd like to prepare an instruction that she needs to be taken not as in any expert role, but simply as a treating nurse. I don't know. But I was very concerned with the amount of opinion she was allowed to give because she was in no way qualified for any of that.
Well, I'm not sure I'm understanding what it is that you're asking me for. Usually if there's a curative, there's a specific, hey, this is what I want you to give.
I would have to draw it up. Obviously, I haven't had the chance to do it. But.
I'm not saying I would give it. It's just, usually if there's a request, it's usually coupled with this is the remedy I seek. Anything else before we go?
Not from the defense. We have witnesses posted.
Witnesses, yes.
Tentatively, we do plan on calling live Dr. Tepa Sanchez, live Dr. Michelle Smith.
I can't hear. What was it again?
Dr. Tepa Sanchez.
Oh.
Dr. Michelle Smith, potentially Nurse Klink. We have a number of depots from out-of-state providers we need to play, which is the importance of making sure we have any counter designations to fill the rest of that day if we have time.
Okay, well, when you say potential live, so you are sure with the two doctors?
Yeah.
How about the nurse?
That is our schedule as of now. I will let the plaintiffs know if there's any changes to that this evening. I just want to confirm with Mr. Hunter, who left earlier, to make those.
Need to confirm with the doctors. That's their plan. We will confirm the schedule and let counsel know tonight, but that's the game plan.
And then how about the depositions that you're going to be playing?
That I don't know because I apologize. There's just, we're waiting on some counter designations, I think. Do they have them all? Yeah. We have one that's ready to go that's 2 hours long. So.
Who's that?
Dr. Mallon. Any others? Clay's working on them.
Is there anything that I need to rule on?
I understand that they submitted additional designations while we were sitting here today. We need some time to counter-designate. That's for Nebby Walford, if I understand correctly.
Yes, yes. So there was additional designations done for Dr. Walford. Is it Dr. Walford? Which we sent over so they could look at it. So once they counter-designate or in the key, whether, I don't know if there weren't any objections previously to that deck. So we're waiting to see if there's going to be any objections or counter-designations. So there may be something for the court to rule on, but not for something that's going to be played on Thursday.
Okay. Well, anything else before we adjourn?
So, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Have a good afternoon. We're in recess until 8:15, or actually 3:30 on Wednesday, 8:15 on Thursday.
And Your Honor, I'm sorry, I know you just closed, but...
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.